Thank you for listening, and welcome to When Pigs Fly. Talk from the heart, the mind, and the soul. And I'm your host, Andrew Fetter.
Mr. President, distinguished delegates.
ለሰላም ጉዳይ መሰናክል የሆኑትን ሁሉ አይነተኛ ችግሮች እዚህ ላይ ልንጠቅሳቸው እንፈቅዳለን።
Since the beginning of modern civilization, generations of weakness and inherited the only conflicts of world wars. But behold the marriage supper of the lamb and bridegroom unto his bride. Then shall the earth's children know the true expression of one love. Then Mother Earth shall honeymoon in peace. Forever eliminating aspirations, lust, and anguish of wars and rumors of wars.
See now. Seeing the young niggas and blowing up in papers and propaganda spreading in the sun and papers. Not even Superman could have saved you in the papers. Greater judgment of blames. And Babylon, I got the union, I like rain sauce. I give them a uniform and a shame, they make me rain sauce. And now the clock has strike one on the amazing sauce. The middle of them church is trying to save us.
Can we do it? We can do it. We shall do it.
Tell them to not drown me out. When the world government in a falling out, only few might survive crawling out. God let him colleague them sprawling.
From London to Hill and Mall, all the son of the virgin man, institute of the church is war. Preaching and researching war. Practice and rehearsing war. Teaching and learning war. Instigating and urging war. Others keep alerting war. When we jump out and swerve in jar. Now the things and the virgin war. And the priests and the nurturing war. And the street and the curtain war. All what that reversing war.
That was, of course, Damian Marley of Doing His Confrontation. How pinnacle with the subject of today. But before I get into the issues of the UN, we recently have had, as people who maybe have not known overseas, but a travesty has occurred in the Connecticut area where in an elementary school in Connecticut, there's been a shooting elementary school, some 26 people died, and of them have been of children. My thoughts and prayers go out to all those who have been affected, both directly and indirectly through this travesty today. My heart, thoughts and prayers go out to y'all. Anyway, what a day, the way to start a Friday watching that happen. And then, of course, I'll blame it on guns and whatnot, but it's more than that. I'm not really worried down on them. It's hard to see that when you watch what happens with that, you know, and seeing kids get killed, but and around the world, and similar events occur all around the world. And then it comes to the same subject I'm about to talk about, which is actually sort of synonymous to keeping us making things are going to be better for what they are by creating more organizations, more bureaucracies, when that's not the problem. That's part of the problem. And namely, I'm talking about the UN. The United Nations, people often think it's a car because it has a symbol of peace and bringing nations and no more wars. And let me think about it. It started in the 1940s. How many wars have we had? How many genocides have we had? So I don't know how much well the UN has done since then. Probably have done more worse, actually, because they've been directly involved with a lot of the travesties. So let me give you the basis, because a lot of people do not know the history of the UN, how it was created, in fact, who was behind it. And it all happens to do, by the way, it came out of what didn't happen prior to it happened. Let me put it this way. In World War One, after World War One, there was a group of mainly based upon bankers, actually. The Morgans and the Rockefellers, and of course the Rothschilds and the Wahlbergs on the other side of the plane. Even then, it was the Queen herself, family, at that time. It wouldn't be Elizabeth, it would have been her parents. But we know them as the family. And institutionalized and pushed together a League of Nations. Of course, that League of Nations basically became the stronghold over Germany, as if Germany was the bad guy in this picture, by the way, World War One. It was just it could have been either side. Nobody was, that was actually who instituted a war. Instituted a war of power for money, greed, you know, whatever. So League of Nations came out of being because of that, but because the United States never got involved, even at the request of Wilson, the Congress never ratified themselves to be in it. So League of Nations sort of like dwindled. And after the math of the World War II, there was again emergence of that again. Now there was a group called the Council of Foreign Affairs, which then came about being, which also was back, by the way, back in World War One around that time. And, of course, Wilson was involved. Of course, who chaired it was the Rockefellers. Again, they are ones who created the CFR, Council of Foreign Relations. They're also part of the Trilateral Commission. And, of course, they're always the attendees of the Bilderbergs. You'll see always a connotation of group of same circumstances. So you got to look at the pragmatics of WOW before I go on to what the UNY really was created, and not for what people keep on thinking it was created for, even though I'll explain later. So again, when the League of Nations failed to prevent a World War II, which lasted from 1939 to 1945, it was assumed, by the way, this is on Wikipedia's disclosure, because of the widespread recognition that humankind could not avoid a third world war, the United Nations established to replace the flawed League of Nations. In doing so, it incorporated all League of Nations mandates, ratifications as well, in order to promote, maintain international peace, promote cooperation solving international economic, social, and humanitarian problems. The earliest concrete plan for the New World Organization was begun under the guise of the United States State Department in 1939. Franklin D. Roosevelt coined the phrase, the term United Nations, as he described the Allied countries. The term was first officially used on January 1st, 1942, when 26 governments signed the Atlantic Charter pledging to continue the war effort. On April 25th, 1945, the United Nations Conference on International Organization began in San Francisco, which was attended by 50 governments and a number of non-governmental organizations, including the CFR and many bankers who were involved in drafting the United Nations Charter. They don't disclose who drafted the charter. The UN officially came into existence on the 24th of October, 1945, upon ratification of by the Charter, then became the five permanent members of the Security Council, namely France, China, Soviet Union, Russia at that time, United Kingdom, and of course the United States, and by the majority of the other 46 signatories. The first meetings of the General Assembly with 51 nations represented a Security Council, and that took place in London in the Methodist Central Hall, Westminster in London, in January 1946. The organization was based at Sperry Jesuit facility in Lake Success in New York from 1946 to 1952, before its building it was built in Manhattan, New York, which was donated by David Rockefeller. The real version, of course, the United Nations was designed, of course, in 1945 by U.S. bankers and State Department planners. Bankers. Go look at, even says in Wikipedia, bankers. And who wrote the charter? How did it come to be? It was a Council of Foreign Affairs. It was written and conjured up with the help of the Rockefellers, and that's actually a fact. So what does the UN Charter say? Well, let's just say, what is the thesis and what is behind the UN? What would be a theme? Like, we often hear the theme in the War of Independence, Declaration of Independence, by the United States, of the people, for the people, by the people, and so on. But that's actually from the preamble of the Constitution. But we have other areas where it's the pursuit of happiness is the right for the individual. You know, it's in name. You'll hear some connotations of some things said that is actually the universal truth that's put in. And this is put in the preamble. So when you listen to the preamble, it sounds really, really good. And you'd say, wow, this is a really good organization to start. So what does the UN say? It says in its preamble, it is here to save succeeding generations from the scourge of war, while twice in our lifetime has been brought untold sorrow to mankind, and to reaffirm faith in fundamental human rights, in the dignity and in the worth of the human person, in the equal rights of men and women, and of nations large and small, and to establish conditions under which justice and respect for the obligations arising from treaties and other sources of international law can be maintained, and to promote social progress, better standards of life, and a larger freedom. For these ends, to practice tolerance, live together in peace with one another as good neighbors, and to unite our strength to maintain international peace and security, and to ensure by the acceptance of principles the institution of methods that armed force shall not be used save in common interests, and to employ international machinery for the promotion of economic, social advancement of all peoples. So tell me, how's that worked? How has it worked since then? I mean, there was a really good article, and you could look her up, written back when, in April 4, 2006, by Claudia Rosette. And I'll read some things, I'll paraphrase from her article. And it's very fascinating because it really gets into a lot of straight up issues. Remember what I just read to you about the United States? It sounds really like a cool organization to start, right? I mean, everything in there is perfect. What could go wrong, right? Well, a lot could go wrong, and you can see why. How corrupt is the United States? I mean, in recent years, there have been such a broadcast of cascading scandals that, you know, is unfathomable. I mean, there's been wholesale corruption, for example, for the oil for food relief program in Iraq, which has been most visible of current affairs. Yet, we don't even have any full debates about the debacles and the more sensational ones, including the disappearance of funds that were earmarked for the tsunami relief in Indonesia, or the exposure of transnational network of pedophile rape by UN peacekeepers in Africa. We will never actually know. We don't even know any of the sources of losses of funds or the sexual slaveries that have occurred due directly with the UN. We do not even know having an accounting, a full disclosure of monies of the UN. Yet, we are taxed and our monies go to that organization without any oversight, real oversight, or transparency of funding, or oversight as to making sure nothing goes wrong. And it seems like many of you today, including many Americans, as a chief arbiter of legitimacy in global politics, the UN is best to be understood by others to be the only institution standing between us and global anarchy. If that is so, the purports are not promising. The free world is grappling with threats from radical Islam from one side to the continents of Africa all the way to Asia, to the North Korea nuclear blackmail, and of course Iran's pursuit of nuclear bombs. The UN, despite its trophy case of Nobel Peace Prizes, has failed so far to curb any of these, not including the genocides of Darfur. What did they do in Rwanda? What have they been doing in Syria? Where were they during the 70s of the genocide of the people in committed by the government of Indonesia? Where was the UN when Israel was militarily being attempted wiped out in 1948, creating the next attempted genocide? Where was the UN in 1967, again in Israel, in 73? Where was the UN in, after the terrorist actions in Munich? What did they do? They put the same organization that committed those crimes, those terrorist crimes, a seat at in the assembly of the United Nations. That tells you what the United Nations is. You know, in many efforts of the address in the United Nations manifold is its problems in itself. Like I said, has there been really any audits, investigations, committees, reports? How about congressional hearings? How come there hasn't been one real congressional hearing in the United States government to oversight, investigate, delegate, do something about what is going on? We pay $9 billion a year. Where the fuck does it go? Yeah, where? $9 billion a year. I can think of a lot of places where that $9 billion can go. There have been a handful of little arrests by U.S. federal prosecutors leading to General Kofi Annan's step down. Of course, what had happened to him? He just left earlier, but was there a promise of ethics, which had never happened? What about the investigations of BP? Why didn't the United Nations step in and investigate the largest killing caused by in the Gulf? Oh, why? Because they were wearing suits and ties? If somebody wasn't wearing a suit and tie and killed that many people, what would happen to them? Where was the UN in that involvement of that? Is it any likely that there will be any help? Behind the specific scandals and lies which have been perpetrated by the UN's own internal auditors, known of the culture of impunity. I mean, there's been a grand committee that reports to itself alone. I mean, come on. That's like Halliburton being the oversight committee for BP. That's like Chase being the oversight committee for the banks. I mean, today the UN operates with great secrecy and is shielded by its diplomatic immunity. And yet, it has representatives that falls to the perils of the EU with no real representation because there's nothing done openly. They have secret meetings except for their little votes. It's bullshit resolutions, which I'll get into. I mean, one of its prime defenses indeed is sheer impenetrability of its operations. After more than 60 years as global collective, it has become a welter of so many overlapping problems, far-flung projects, quietly invested interests, nepotistic shenanigans, interlocking derogatories as to defy the accurate or easy comprehension, let alone responsible supervision. Money abound. God, it would be the best way if you ever wanted to make a lot of money, just get involved with the UN. Hey, by the way, if you don't have a job now, go work for the UN. I'm sure you get a little action. Just keep your mouth shut. At the UN. Well, let's try this. The one thing clear, I mean, there might be one clear sign of how bad the things have gone with the UN, but it's sort of difficult to tally even so much a basic sum of its royal budget. What budget does the UN really have? It can't even disclose its royal budget. It keeps changing from the moment. They'll say there's a core budget, and then there's this other budget, and another budget. You look at it, it's like, I tried looking at it. I was going to post it here. I was like, it would take like 2 hours. And after doing it, you'd be more confused than I. It was done purposely. It would be like IBM filing its tax return with 5 million pages so the IRS can't even do a normal audit. No way. Okay, whatever. Nor does the UN represent a full set of accounts. And its statistics are so full of shit, they vary even within its own individual agencies and programs. So who can believe what they even, their own analysis? It's a joke. There's absolutely no transparent budget in the UN. Little of the system is even open to even real scrutiny, even within the UN. Not one single authority outside of them has proved to be able to compel any genuine accounting. Not one. Moreover, even though there can be no longer any doubt that the scale of rot is well within the UN's building, the UN's top management continues to insist to the contrary. I mean, you can take the central scandal of the recent UN, namely the oil for food thing, and that was just the tip of the iceberg where money is being well placed in other matters. Yet we, as Americans, contribute $9 billion a year. Do the math. In 10 years, that's $90 billion. What could we have done with that $9 billion even to this day? Think about it. How many families could have we fed with $9 billion? How many families could have had health care? How many children could have? How about our schools? How about rebuilding Staten Island right now? How about putting better infrastructure with our roads and bridges? How about hospitals themselves? How about schools? How about education? $9 billion a year. Think of it. That goes around a long way, don't it? And this is what really boggles my mind. If you want to see something unfathomable, I mean, to anyone seeking to capture the turf of the UN, I mean, creating one of these new bodies has been a favorite path. They love creating new organizations, and it's just blurring, overlapping. It seems they appoint at least and nominate something. To name just a few better known ones, is of course UNICEF. Oh, well, UNICEF has a really good program. Its main job is for food, right? Huh. How much money goes toward UNICEF that actually goes toward food? Huh. It has a good intention, but does it all go in the right spot? Then there's the World Food Program, the WFP, which was created in 1961. Then there's the Commission on Trade and Development, UNCTAD. 1964. And then there's the UN development of UNTP, which was created in 1966. And then there's the UN Environmental Program, UNEP, 1972. And the UN Project Services, UNOF, that's what, 1994. What the hell? Service projects. And there's the UN Habitat, 1997. Then there's the World Tourism Agency, and so forth and so forth. Many of these even overlap, that's unfathomable. Most of them probe open up to even the receding vistas of regional office, working groups, and the like. The office are scattered around the globe, from New York to Rome to Nairobi to News to Madrid to Bangkok and beyond. I mean, there's been periodic efforts to even streamline and harmonize the system tend to be a joke, to paint another after another on top of another with layering effects. Typical of this is the Secretary General's own latest initiatives yielded this to the past within the February, the high-level panel on the system-wide coherence in the areas of development, humanitarian assistance, environment. Whew. I have to drink some water after saying that one. Its 15 high-level panelists is a senior fellow from Turner, UN's foundation. You know, Turner, Ted Turner, he has a UN foundation. Where's oversight? What happens over there? And then you get into the matters of, and this is going to be a real one. This is going to obviously very politicized. And the matters over involving Israel and the Palestinians, It's unlike anything like nuclear proliferation. Yet the UN is one genuine obsession in hypocrisy has been outdone by its mischief-making and blatant Jew-hating anti-Semitism. Pure and simple. I mean, you look at the UN program set up to help the Palestinians over the past, have not only failed to brood seasoned lies, but have helped create a culture of entitled violence, fueled, in fact, by the UN's own anti-Israel agenda. I mean, the UN's own condemnation of Zionism as racism in 1975, and finally repealed, it took how many years? From 1991. And this, is, of course, was followed by the UN's 2001 Durban Conference, which the whole pragma was over racism, fell right into the plethora of Jew hatred festival. The UN's council invites totalitarian Syria to take chair, part of its Syria Council, but democratic Israel has never, ever been allowed to hold a seat. In fact, Israel has never been allowed, not Security Council or even the Human Rights Council, ever. Yet it's obvious of the Jew hatred in the UN. The UN's basis, let's put this in perspective. There's about over 7 billion people living in the world. Last I looked. Israel is about 7 million people. 6 of them being Jews, 1 million being Arabs. Yeah, that doesn't even account to 0.1% of the population. Yet the preponderance of unscaling resolutions and microwave looking on Israel is unfathomable. There have been over 200 resolutions from year to year to year to year to year to year upon Israel. And how many do you see upon any other nations? How many do we really look at in Syria, Darfur, any of these travesties that occur? How much do we really look at what's happening in Congo, Guatemala? You don't hear this at all. Look up the obsession that they have that having of refugees. Does Darfur have refugees in Sudan have their special organizations for helping them? No. You've never heard a special refugee status. I mean, United Nations just pure, simply bias against Israel is overt in its own body, set forth in the General Assembly, which again, year after year, passed them over 19 resolutions against Israel. And almost none against non-members, including the world's perspective or drives. I mean, the World Health Organization, meaning Assembly in Geneva, 2000, passed out one resolution against a specific country. I mean, the World Health Organization. And yet, you know, it's interesting, the World Health Organization, you think Israel has performed probably close to 50% of the most updated medical findings in the world. Israel was charged with violating Palestinian rights to health. Wow, isn't that amazing? How could that possibly be? I mean, I lived there for 6 years. That's all pure bullshit. And everybody knows it. I mean, if that were true, then they can file the same thing in the United States to people who are denied health care in the United States, to the average folk, to the poor people. Poor people, how about the middle class? Everyone has a right to health care in Israel. So what are they talking about? It's unfathomable. Similarly now, we go back to the International Labor Organization at its annual 2005 conference in Geneva. It carried out only one major other country in its gender report. And yet it had a lengthy charge document charging Israel with violating the rights of Palestinian workers. Absurd. In the summer of 2004, the UN International Court of Justice at Hague issued an advisory opinion that followed the script of a political campaign orchestrated by the PLO representative at the UN, Nasser al-Kidwa. The busiest corridor of the Palestinian nations, the European headquarters of the UN in Geneva, displays no less than 10 larger-than-life panels devoted to the Palestinian cause. It is simply a clear message that the Palestinians are the world's greatest human rights victim. Clear implication that Israel must, therefore, be the world's greatest human rights abuser, right? It's absurd. There are three special UN entities dedicated to the Palestinian cause, the oldest of which is the Special Committee to Investigate Israeli Practice Against the Human Rights of the Palestinian People and Other Arabs of the Occupied Territories, created in 1968. In 1975, the General Assembly added the Committee on the Exercise of the Inalienable Rights of the Palestinian People. Supporting its work is the Vision for Palestinian Rights. Lodged within the UN Secretariat, the division boosts a 16-member staff and a budget of millions, which is solely devoted to the constant promotion of anti-Israel propaganda throughout the world. Wow, Israel doesn't have a real chance in the world of policies and public media. I mean, there was it Abed Ibn who once said that something of the fact that if Angola put out a resolution toward Israel saying that Israel had made the world flat, it would pass in the UN. And you wonder how much things have changed in the 40s in that big building called the UN for Jews. It's no different than it was in the 40s. It's simple hypocrisy. Tens of thousands are being killed, women and children in Syria alone. Yet, you mention Israel. How much tension do you got? In 1949, the United Nations Relief Works Agency for Palestine Refugees was created, known as the UNRWA. Why are there no other refugees ever get the same perpetual status? They have a perpetual lifetime of being refugees. You talk about the welfare program, the welfare mom, perpetual welfare. They have welfare for a lifetime. Why is it that United States, people living here and paying their taxes, our money goes to the UN, which somehow $9 billion ends up to these welfare people, because that's what it is, pure and simple. I don't care. Let those states, those countries, where they reside, absorb them, pure and simple. Why is there no other refugees for over the last 60 years have been on that perpetual system? They eventually have been absorbed in nation states, some way, some form. Why is the perpetual status continue? One reason. Solely for the perpetuating hatred toward the state of Israel and toward Jews. Simple. Yet the United States government has finance of the operations of program officers, part of whose job is to make random and announced inspections of UNRWA facilities to ensure the sanctity and from the military operations. In 2004, there was a United States Congress asked the General Accounting Office to investigate media claims that the taxpayer dollars given to the UNRWA had been used to support individuals involved in militant and terrorist activities. During its investigation, the GAO discovered several irregularities in its processing and employment history. Meaning, in other words, a lot of that money that you pay for your tax dollars has ended up in hands of Hamas, Hezbollah, Al-Qaeda even. Under the law of the United States, therefore, which is under action right now, we are ceased to send any funding to the UN. Per the United States law of 1994. I mean, there's been peacekeeping since the end of the Cold War, supposedly, when it had been for the UN. Here again, the expansion of the UN mission has brought everything from widespread allegations of corruption to drug dealing, to rape, to sexual exploitation of the hungry children, known as sex for food. As a columnist named Mark Stein had aptly put it, in large parts of the underdeveloped, the appearance of the blue-helmeted forces has come to a signal warning, stay away, keep your children away. But neither have these blue-helmeted forces been visible when and where they have might actually be needed. Provided with the manpower plus a budget that ought to be to qualify the UN itself a formal military power, the organization stood passively aside while the massacres occurred in Rwanda. And concurrently, what did it do in Sudan? Indeed, it has yet mustered even the integrity, not even to kick Sudan off its Geneva-based Human Rights Commission at the time, which at the time was committing drastic murders in Darfur. It has been funny that this Human Rights Council has had members including China, Cuba, Saudi Arabia, Zimbabwe, some of the worst human rights countries violators in the world. And then here's another thing. As for its disaster relief, the record is similarly deplorable, as I mentioned earlier. When the tsunami hit in Asia in December 2004, the United States and countries, including Australia, for example, and Israel, by the way, rushed to help the victims. The UN rushed to help itself, demanding exclusive rights to direct the aid effort and immediately about the monies. UN officials warned loudly of the health crisis that never materialized, denounced the U.S. as a stingy and promised, because it promised transparency of use of funds. A year later, the Financial Times reported that, in fact, from what could be gleaned of the UN's large, incompetent, incomplete secret accounts, the organization expenditure on overhead, travel, hotel, lavish funding, international talk fests, and the like were triple of those of private charities. Triple. If such is the general nature of the UN's contribution to peace, humanitarian assistance, its contribution to global prosperity is a similar story. The simple truth is what it is. The simple and true recipe for wealth is liberty framed by the seat of rule of law. The great lesson of the last century learned at horrible cost is the central planners and state schemes are a brew that intends not toward prosperity, but toward dictatorship and economic immiseration. In 1990, the lesson seemingly briefly to have been learned. As the Soviet Union headed for collapse, the global aid profession was outwitted over the new profound virtues of privatization. But in the 16-some-odd years since then, and the UN are forever now, in the name of sustainable development, has fostered a comeback command and control planning, courtesy of the same bureaucrats that can't even count for its own expenditures. The amount of the UN activity now revolves the so-called Millennium Goals, which aim to cut world aid in half by 2015. Wow, we're right now 2012, about to be 2013. How are you doing, UN, on that one? This noble-sounding goal serves as a framework for calculating for the last decimal point as set targets for which the UN system then decides how resources should be apportioned. The UN agencies and agency working groups, the never-ending succession of conferences and declarations and plans to determine to control the supposed human cause of climate change. And we've got a horn in on the horn oh, internet. And watch out for the oil for food imposed by the UN. And how about improving instilling an income tax in the entire world, including on the entire developed world, via, let's call it, the carbon tax, where once again a Soviet agency, Gosplan, issued five-year plan for imprisoned people. The UN aims to administer and profit from 15-year plans for the entire human community. Think of it as the planetary socialism supported finance in partnership with capitalism. In other words, it's a manipulation of control to contrive to slowly move things into more of a global control one way or another. It's a fiat. Reminds me of, you know, when they ever need monies in the government. I know in California, for that was sort of funny. I saw them put out a, hey, we need more money, so we need to raise taxes. So what they say is, you know, nobody wants to deny money for her kids, right? So what do they do? Governor Brown and all them, they go, hey, well, what we'll do is we'll put out a proposal. We need to raise money for our schools. We're going to add a couple cents to your sales tax and a couple percentage or whatever on your income tax, and it's all going for your schools. And we leave a little line within the scripture of the law, and people just read it but go right over their head because people can't read that far. And it's basically, and other things as necessary. Meaning it's for all monies of this new law would be primarily targeted towards schools. Oh, and if necessary, for other departments in the government. Something in that format. In other words, people first are told, oh, it's about voting. So the bill came on, people voted because it's to help our kids. And it's funny because I've heard this over and over and over again, like some 30, 40 years. I remember my dad saying the same thing. I remember the lottery in California example saying, hey, the lottery is for to help fund our schools, period. We won't have to pay. There won't be any monies needed from outside, right? How'd that go? Seems that every time they always want to raise money, add more taxes, and they'll throw a fiat over it. It's something good, and it never really goes to that direction. It's like proposing things. It's to scare you and things. It's like 9/11 happened. What happened? We have the Patriot Act. Oh, we've got to be protected. And what does it do? It takes away our liberty. Now, right recently, as bad as what happened, I don't want to get off track here, but as bad as what happened today, the tragedy occurred with another that happened in Connecticut, almost like Aurora happened. And, you know, and then it happened in Colorado way back when. I mean, there's always been shootings and stuff. And now it's another thing of a feeling of gun control. There's always something. Control the people. And why gun control? By the way, the people outside the United States don't understand this. You never will, unfortunately. But this is the law in the United States. It is our right, by the way. The right to bear arms, the Second Amendment, has nothing to do about, oh, I'm going to go out hunting. It doesn't have nothing to do about, oh, yeah, about going target practicing with our gun. It has nothing to do with, oh, wait, defend myself in my home. It is literally says about the people shall be arm themselves. This is the contrary to the present government. They should have their own be able to be their own militia. It is to balance against the government. It is create balance. It correspondingly comes after the Second Amendment. Without the Second Amendment, we would never have free speech, which is another thing other nations don't understand. We have free speech. We can say fuck you to Islam or fuck you to Christianity or Judaism or fuck you to the Catholic Church or fuck you to anything we want. We can say anything we want anything that's blasphemous, because that's our right. That is our right to have us say what we like. Don't like it? That's fine. But I may not like what you say either. That's mine too. We all have the right to speak. That may be blasphemous, but it's our right to free speech, which people are outside the United States don't have. And by the way, the United Nations have systematically tried to curtail it. And it unfortunately didn't occur. They tried recently with the blasphemy law. If you had said anything about anything negative about Islam, it would be against the law. Now that takes across our ideas of sovereignty. When does the United Nations go over our sovereignty, tell us, overcome our Bill of Rights, take away our rights as individuals? When that occurs, every American say, fuck you to the United Nations. Every time. Including civil disability. Any law that's institutionalized worldwide by the United Nations trying to put their rules over our government, over our rights, or us as individuals, as Americans say, fuck you. Civil disobedience to that order. I don't even care. We as Americans have our rights. We have our declarations since 1776. Therefore, we have our own sovereignty. We kicked out our queen. United Nations is not our queen or our king. United Nations was created as a framework, not of international law, but a basis for creating an ambience, what I said, creating peace between nations. Not to enforce their will over others. How well is it done so far? Should look at not the United States. Pretty decent when all these people want to come live in this country. You don't see people running to go live in Saudi Arabia or Iran or Syria. I mean, the United Nations was founded as a forum of governments. As we had simply had occasional to learn over the decades, this arrangement presented quite enough problems of its own. The UN in itself, in contravention of its own charter, is rapidly evolving into something larger, more corporate, more menacing in itself. A predatory, undemocratic, unaccountable, self-serving vehicle for a global government. No candor, no difference from the Soviet Union of old. The UN is unwilling, gross, inefficient, incompetent. It is disgusting. It's configured as to reach to the point deep in national politics of its member states by sheer weight and persistence to force its irrelevance on others. Some which is benign and ununderstood. If we look into the parables, for example, within the Middle East, for example, how has the UN done in the Middle East regarding Lebanon? Has the Hezbollah moved beyond the litany, which it was supposed to be? Have they returned their arms to Lebanese army? No. Under two separate mandates, under the Security Council, they were required to. What has gone to that? Has it been enforced? No. What has the UN done about the war crimes committed by Hamas and Hezbollah using civilians as shields or sending rockets and terrorist activities towards civilians? None. Under the UN Charter, it was incorporated all prior treaties, including the ones ratified by the League of Nations, including the ratified treaty of the Treaty of Lausanne, which was had attached all agreements from the San Remo Conference of 1920, which included the building of the national homeland of Jews, where it would be the Palestine mandate to be Israel. Some of which of 70% of this mandate was given to the Hashemites, that's called Jordan, in the Treaty of Lausanne. So the remainder, in effect, was Jewish land. Thus, Jews building the West Bank or any part in Israel, including under the scriptures of the mandate, are legal. The UN in itself is in contempt of its own resolution, prior mandates, and commitments. Then you go into the thing called the UNESCO. In itself, talk about hatred of Jews. Here we go again. It has a history of routinely removing history of Jews from Israel, i.e., for example, the Rachel Tomb. Josephtown, the City of David, United Nations Educational Scientific Culture Center, UNESCO, adopted decisions and calling set forth all things. The decisions are decided, initiated, and promoted by Arab states and was adopted by consensus of Western members of the commission. Indeed, the vote is always anti-Jewish, launched by the UN Office meant to promote culture and education in the world. But in fact, UNESCO's robber barons are sanctifying the current global campaign aimed at liquidating the legitimacy of the Israeli dream and its Jewish nature. In 2009, UNESCO designated Jerusalem as a capital of Arab culture. Really? Working with the Palestinian officials and key Arab figures to protest against what they call the Israeli occupation of Holy Jerusalem. Are other cities granted the title over the years, like Algiers, Damascus, Tunis, Amman, Beirut, Khartoum? The Arabs find it difficult to convincingly portray Israel as an usurpable land as long as the world believes there is a huge connection between the people of the Bible and the land of the Bible. UNESCO, in its way, is denying this connection by depicting Jewish history in the U.S. as no more than insignificant. UNESCO appears to deny that the Jewish people had laid its roots in Israel for more than 4,000 years, or that 1,000 before there was even Jesus Christ, or there was King David, made Jerusalem the Jewish city par excellence. No mention of King Solomon will ever come out of their lips. Never entirely abandoned, even the entire deadly persecutions. The city of David and Jerusalem, a large target of UNESCO anti-theory, is now the hottest open archaeological sites in the world, which biblical artifacts are finding non-stop Jewish connections. Ancient burial sites, royal seals. There is, and UNESCO is using archaeological bash against Israel and treats Israeli archives as national martinets. In recent years, UNESCO increasingly is collaboration with ISCO, the International Body of Islamic Conference. According to ISESCO's propaganda, the biblical story and the Jewish temple are only fiction. Fiction. They're calling Jews fiction. They're calling Solomon fiction, David fiction, Moses fiction, King Saul fiction. Perhaps the Maccabees were fiction. Perhaps the Zealots were fiction. Perhaps there was no Roman wars against the Jews. There was no two temples. Fiction. There was no the Hasidics living in Sfat. Fiction. Yet the whole Jerusalem in itself, its word is Hebrew. Yerushalayim means the city of peace in Hebrew. UNESCO ideology portrays Jews as no more than invaders or colonizers, while the Muslims, in fact, were the ones who actually invaded in the late 7th century. They are not the descendants or indigenous Canaanites as presupposed. In 2020, UNESCO decided that the Rachel's Tomb and the Cave of the Patriarchs are Muslim mosques. Rachel's Tomb is a mosque? I mean, where Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob were buried, that's a mosque. Western countries didn't even raise anything to protest. UNESCO never mentioned that, in fact, the tomb of the biblical patriarchs, namely their own king, also the tomb of the first judge, Otanel ben Bekanes, or the tomb of some of the famous generals and confidants to Saul and David, or the tombs of Ruth and Jesse, David's grandmother and father. There's no word by UNESCO about the fact that Rachel's tomb is unanimously reversed as the burial site of one of the Bible's greatest mother, wife of Jacob, Jewish blessed mother. The second infidia, the UNESCO condemned Israel for destruction damage caused by the cultural heritage of the Palestinians, a crime against the common heritage of humanity. However, UNESCO remained silent when a Palestinian mob, including Palestinian police, destroyed a Joseph tomb at a major religious shrine and built a mosque on its site. Upon the outbreak of the second invasion, Palestinian terrorists also prevented Rachel's tomb for 41 days. Jews were prevented from visiting the compound. UNESCO never condemned it. Recently, dozens of graves at the Mount of Olives Cemetery in Jerusalem were vandalized, and the latest series of attacks on Judea's oldest cemetery, where Jews have been buried since biblical times. Again, UNESCO remains silent. UNESCO also posts a long list of decisions to boycott, isolate the Jewish state. In November 7, 1974, UNESCO voted to withhold assistance from Israel in the field of education, science, culture, because of Israel's persistent alteration of the historical features of Jerusalem. On November 20, 1974, UNESCO voted in also to exclude Israel from its European regional group. This anti-Jewish ostracism was not abandoned until 1978, after the United States withheld $40 billion in payments from the organization of protests. UNESCO's war on Israel and the West is continued, was so blatant that in 1984, the U.S., U.K., and other Western countries left the organization all complete. In 1989, UNESCO made the claim that Israel's occupation of Jerusalem was destroying the Holy See by acts of interference, destruction, and transformation. In 1990, UNESCO attacked what it described as the irreversible changes of the Jerusalem architectural heritage resulting from Israeli occupation. And therefore, was the mayor of Jerusalem at that time, boycotted interacting sciences in Jerusalem. Despite Israel's history of its ceiling enlightenment, like the highest production of scientific publications and museums and per capita, as mentioned, all international conferences in the science in Jerusalem were boycotted by UNESCO. In 1996, UNESCO organized a symposium in Jerusalem at the body of Paris headquarters, but no Jewish or Israeli groups were invited. When in 1999, a UNESCO delegation visited Jerusalem, it refused to meet with Israeli officials. In past, UNESCO has been called for financial sanctions against Israel. Past hundreds of resolutions criticizing Israeli's activities in Judea and Samaria. In 2001, UNESCO pronounced the Cairo Declaration document for Jerusalem antiquities preservation while falsely accusing Israel of destroying Islamic antiquities on the Temple Mount and Jerusalem's old city, and divert attention from Palestinian crimes against its heritage and history. When the United Nations celebrated its 50th anniversary, U.S. UNESCO refused to mention the Shoah in its World War II resolution, intentionally ignoring Israel's request to include reference to the destruction of Jews of Europe. On the final note, a UNESCO reported on science, and get this, Jewish theologian, famous rabbi known as Rambam, Mohammedes, is classified as a Muslim, Musa bin Mamun. In fact, his name is Rambam, Rabbi Moshe bin Mamun. He's been even forced to convert to Islam by the UN's revisionist historians. Get that. All this, UNESCO, is a fucking joke. It's like saying that Native Americans never had any historical relevance in the United States. Get it? During the Middle Ages, the French Inquisition confiscated and burned Mohammedi's books. From the elegant Parisian boulevards, UNESCO's inquirers are now following the same dreadful passion of rendering history in the Jewish as Judenrein. That means German free of Jews. How different. In Africa, from the Congo murders, the Sudan, Darfur, Mali, Somalia, how are the Muslim in the Muslim Brotherhood takeover of Egypt like Hitler via democracy about to set the rule of law, Sharia, with the rights to the individual gone. No free speech, no free thought, unless Egyptians remove this cancer before it's in full and absolute control. Where is the UN in this? In Latin America, where it was murders going on by governments, and in Mexico with cartels, and Brazil and the rest of Latin America are still impoverished. What about human rights? The human providers from one end to another, from Asia to Africa. On the top hit list for the most gruesome violators, 20 top lists are amongst Islamic states from Asia to Africa. What is the UN doing about human rights in Islamic countries? How many resolutions against them? about what has been done in the Security Council? None. In Europe, UN does not even give one hint, one mention, one word. It's like the UN and the EU. We're watching the EU as an example of what the UN is. Add a little China to the mix on top of the EU. Throw in some Saudi Arabia spice. Mold it with Iran and you got the UN. That's its plan. You have the EU. Throw some China mix into it. Add some flavoring of Saudi Arabia. And put it in a pan of Iran and you got the plan of Iran, of the UN. Get it? Sex scandals. There is a fish movie you have to watch. Definitely watch. I saw this almost bled in tears. It's called The Whistleblower. It's a movie. Go watch it. There's a famous journalist named Tanya Domi, lived and worked in Bosnia in from 1996 to 2000 to assist the country from its recovery. During its trip in Sarajevo in 2000, she brokered the biggest story of her career, high-tail crimes and deceit and exploitations. She wrote, 10 years, I broke the story of my life from Bosnia about the riveting, courageous actions of American Catherine Bulbic, a human rights investigator, who uncovered an extensive presence of human sex trafficking in post-war Bosnia and Herzegovina. The trafficking was aided and abetted by UN monitors and police, Bosnian police, government officials, and high-ended level UN and State Department officials, including now retired United States Ambassador Jaco Paul Klein, who at the time was the highest UN official in Bosnia and held responsible for overseeing the UN's international police force. That was published in April 12, 2007. In the United Nations, a former U.S. ambassador was accused of being a major promoter of human trafficking in the world by failing to assault sexual abuse by the UN peacekeepers. And John Miller, a former U.S. ambassador at large, on the issue of modern slavery, who is now a professor, urged the world body to enact real terms in its peacekeeping department. A senior official in the UN peacekeeping department, Yawada Odia, called the accusation completely false, actually offensive. She said the U.S. has taken action on many fronts to end the sexual abuse, but on the contrary, Miller said the abuse by peacekeepers constituted sexual trafficking and the UN had not done little to implement or report or suggest reforms in its report even after its allegations in 2005. It is hard to believe, it's hard for the United Nations to take lead, this is a quote by Miller, in combating human trafficking, who he now teaches, by the way, at George Washington University. It's very hard to take the lead when you are one of the major promoters of human trafficking in the world. He spoke this at a UN, at a conference on human trafficking being by the Thailand's UN Commission and UN. You look it up. Oh, for real. And then there's, of course, the famous UN Sex for Food scandal. The United Nations, you can check this out, it's proof of this. It was held in WikiLeaks cable shows the UN peacekeepers are holding food hostage from starving underage girls in Ivory Coast until sexual acts were performed for payment. United Nations peacekeepers in Ivory Coast enticed underage girls in a poor part of the West African nation to exchange sex for food. The cable was written in 2010, focused on the behavior of Benin's peacekeeper station in a western town, an area that has been crosshairs of 10 years of conflict. A random total of 10 underage girls by the aid group Save the Children in the UK in 2000 found that 8 performed sexual acts with Benin peacekeepers on a regular basis in order to secure their basic needs. 8 of 10 had gone sexual relations with Benin soldiers in exchange for food and lodging. The table wrote. On Tuesday, the UN spokesman Michael Barnett confirmed that in the April 16th, these Benis were repatriated to men from barred from serving at the UN. Wow, thank you. We see it as a command and control problem. Yeah, really. The commanders, he said, failed to maintain an environment that prevents exploitation abuse. Sexual misconduct by the UN has been reported on and on, including countries in Congo, Cambodia, Haiti, as well as early as involving from Morocco peacekeepers in Ivory Coast. Sadly, this conduct is neither rare or even punished within UN. Luckily, former investment banker Amy Horowitz has led the way in exposing the corruption in the United Nations. His film, it's called You and Me, is coming to theater. I hope to see that. It probably is already out by now. When the United Nations was founded more than 6 years, embodied our hope for a safer, more peaceful world. But as reports of human rights violations, international calm makes deadly headlines, a question rises. Is United Nations living up to its full capacity in finding ideals? The answer is no. In a film that exposes the incompetence and corruption at the heart of the United Nations, filmmakers Amy Horowitz and Matthew Grove show how an organization created to ennoble mankind now actually battles evil and sows global chaos. You and Me takes us on a harrowing, dark, humorous tour of the UN's scandalous disregard for the people and the principle for which it's defend. Along the way, we learn how peacekeeping forces stationed in Puerto del Bar fired in a crowd of unarmed protesters, killing dozens. How the UN failed to investigate. How the UN's humanitarian effort for the oil food run devoted into one of the biggest scams in history. And how the UN never disciplined or even fired the culprits. How the UN became for what it is, leading the international effort to eradicate terrorism, but the opposite. And I already mentioned some of the countries that are in the UN Rights Council, such as Algeria, Morocco, Tunisia, Mali, Pakistan, Malaysia, China, Jordan, Saudi Arabia, Russia, Cuba, had even Syria. I mean, it's a joke. It's hypocrisy standstill. Tens of thousands are being killed in Syria. Not one mentioned. Mentioned Israel, all hell breaks loose. Ban Ki-moon tries to even censor criticism of the UN. A damning report on Biden has suggested he is overly secretive, tries to censor criticism, and allows background deals to dictate get some top UN generals after he has been granted a second term. The UN wants to remove your sovereignty or even your free speech. They want to say not to say blasphemies of Islam or other religions, suppose. Just recently stopped placing, but they maintain to implement. If indeed, as I believe, the foundation of the UN is rooted in some selfish If indeed, as I believe, the foundation of the United Nations was rooted in some selfish elitist scheme to morally easily control people rather than to act as some angelic international body of peace. And why would any modern-day peace, love, freedom supporter believe that the UN holds answers to the solutions on our world's greatest problems? The idea behind the UN is really quite unique and quite cool. But the reality is, from the beginning of its conception, it's real a mask unfolding. Reality from what is deceit, outright stupidity. The present notion was that all peace-loving countries would band together in a world where war would be avoided and harmony would reign through cooperation and fairness. Did that happen? There has been more wars, more bloodshed than ever since the advent of the UN. Any time before. Why? The concept from the beginning was rooted in artificial sorrow. How can the UN be seen in any way as something in inception? How can it be a representative of people? And people are in these countries still don't have the right to say or represent the true notions of who they are. The grand representative of the UN was brought forth and given emergency to begin with, Inclair, unbelievable, oblivious, and clear UN representative. UN from its own start was a collective of countries run by kings, dictators, monopoly-clad political parties, which in the U.S. has been like, under the guise of a two-party system, monetary interests. It wasn't some grassroots bonanza. It wasn't some butterfly equipped with angel wings. It was concocted by brutes and tyrants, namely banks and financiers and political power, monetary power. The bulk of them there in their own paradise of arrogant successors to golden hereditary thrones. Is it no wonder that we now have a world monetary fund, a world bank, a world trade organization, a world peace company, a world court? Every other word, world, world war. While the world keeps spiraling in its materialist ball of ignorance and selfishness and fear and violence, our lovely world, supposedly based on the UN program, is working just fine for those who created for themselves. It does not work for everyday people. It does not work at its root level with compassion and concern for love and freedom. That is why the consolidation of power has perpetually increased. Everyone looks away. Even with our hero, Franklin Roosevelt, met with those great guys, Churchill and Stalin, shoved the boondog down the duped world's throat. In medicine, in the media, in finance, everywhere, power has been centrally controlled while the people have yet been lied to and lied to believe that they are wise and free. Even the United States government is full of flaws, but the government is in place to correct the flaws because the citizens are openly given free will to fix the flaws or help things not rot. United Nations in itself is flawed, even in its foundation, even in its motives. To those who can see through the wall and the veil, the false declarations of love and peace from the wealthy and powerful, the conniving fearmongers who only want to always be in control over others. It was not the common people who met in the backrooms, who met to meet in backrooms, in the secrecy to draft the UN Charter or to continue to expand and stretch the UN's octopus tentacles all over the world, while the people of the world suffer, getting drowned. The creators of the UN and the perpetrators of the continued UN expansion are the same powers that continue to undermine love and indomitable will of our open minds, hearts, souls, and spirits in our individual and collective ascensions to a truly better and more beautiful world. It has been made clear by those who created it, developed it, nurtured it, and gave some land to have their building on it. Namely, those who control the banks, the Rockefellers, the Morgans, the Windsors, the Rothschilds. Those were the ones. Those are the facts. The late George Carlin called them the real owners. They are the ones who call our policy. And no wonder the UN is such a joke with its hypocrisy, the pimps and whores who have enslaved our children, who have made slaves of our women and children, and our promoters of hate. Yet these are their words, their preamble. To save succeeding generations from scourge of war, which twice in our lifetime has been brought untold sorrow to mankind, to affirm and faith in fundamental human rights and the dignity and worth of human person, and the equal rights of men and women, of nations large and small, to establish conditions under which justice and respect for obligations arising from treaties and other sources of international law can be maintained, to promote social progress and justice, standards of life, and larger freedom. And for these ends, to practice tolerance and live together in peace with one another as good neighbors, and to unite our strength to maintain international peace and security. And of course, ensure by the acceptance of principles, the institution of methods, the armed force, shall not be used save the interest and common interest to employ international machinery for the promotion of economic social advancement of all peoples. There is a famous guy. His name is David Rockefeller. He is was the chairman of the Trilateral Commission. His family wrote the Charter for the United Nations, or helped write it. It was his family that put the UN, donated its land in Manhattan. And this is what he said, David Rockefeller, in 1991, in June, before, as he addressed the Trilateral Commission. We are grateful to the Washington Post, the New York Times, Time Magazine, and other great publications whose directors have attended our meetings and respected the promises of discretion for almost 40 years. It would have been impossible for us to develop our plan for the world if we had been subject to the bright lights of publicity during those years. But the world is now more sophisticated and prepared to march towards a world government, the supranational sovereignty of an elite, an intellectual elite, and the world bankers is surely preferable to the national auto-determination practiced in past centuries. That was said by David Rockefeller. Then he said, September 23rd, 1994, this present window of opportunity during which a truly peaceful, independent world war might be built would not be open for too long. We are on the verge of a global transformation. All we need is the right major crisis, and the nations will accept the new world order. And then, of course, Mark's famous speech. He wrote in his book, in his memoir, David Rockefeller, in his memoir called The Memoirs. You can read it. It's fact. For more than a century, ideological extremists at either end of the political system have been seized upon well. Publicized incidents such as my encounter with Castro to the attack the Rockefeller family for the inordinate influence they claim we wield over American political and economic institutions. Some even believe we are part of a secret cabal working against the best interests of the United States, characterizing my family as internationalists or globalists, and of conspiring with others around the world to build a more integrated global political economic structural, one, in other words, one world, if you will, if that's the charge. I stand guilty, and I am proud of it. So, with all that understanding, I believe this. The awareness of what it is the UN is a realization of its mask of illusion of what we assume we are and what the world is. The world is not a square, but a circle. We all, in reality, are not a separate, nor are we separate from our universe. We are like leaves on the tree of life, with different views, yet all connected to the same common branches being humanity. The same trunk being Earth, rooted into the infinite universe, being God, Ein Sof, Allah, God. So with that, I say God bless you all, and I'm going to close with a very cool song. And this is dedicated to remembrance of Carl Sagan. And I close with that. And with that, I say God bless you all and thank you. And have a glorious weekend. We are all connected.
Twilight, to the Earth, Kevin, to the rest of the universe, Tom.
I think nature's imagination is so much greater than man's. He's never gonna let us
relax, relax.
We live in between universes where things change all right, but according to patterns, rules, or as we call them, laws of nature.
I'm just a man standing on a planet. Really, I'm just a speck. I'm just a speck compared with a star. The planet is just another speck. To think about all of this, to think about the vast emptiness of space. There's billions and billions of stars. Billions and billions of specks of beauty of a living thing. It's not the atoms that go into it, but the way those atoms are put together. The cosmos is also within us. We're made of smart stuff. We need our way. The cosmos can do it.
Across the sea of space, the stars are alert. We've traveled this way before, and there is much to be learned.
We're all connected to each other, biologically, to the Earth, chemically, to the rest of the universe.
Talk, find it elevating and exhilarating to discover that we live in a universe which permits the evolution of molecular machines as intricate and subtle as we.
My body are traceable phenomena in the cosmos that makes me want to grab people in the street and say, have you heard this?
The beauty of a living thing is not the atoms that go into it, but the way those atoms are put together. The cosmos is also within us. We're made of smart stuff. We need our way. The cosmos can do it.
There's this tremendous mass of waves all over in space, which is the light bouncing around the moon, going from one thing to the other in this all really big, really, really big. But you gotta stop and think about it, about the complexity, and you get the pleasure. This all really big, really, really big. To think about all of this, to think about the vast emptiness of space.
There's billions and billions of stars, billions and billions of specks.
The beauty of a living thing is not the atoms that go into it, but the way those atoms are put together.
The cosmos is also within us. We're made of smart stuff. We need our way. Cosmos and know it.
Across the sea of space, the stars are others. We've traveled this way before, and there is much to be learned.
Thank you, and God bless you. Have a glorious weekend. Until next week. Catch my next show on the 21st. I have special guest, Carrie Fezza, for our special show on December 21st. New beginnings, not new ends. God bless y'all. Take care.